Hey, I'm Jeremy. I play guitar.
I'm Camille, and I play keys.
And I'm Reed, and I play drums.
I'm Patrick, I play bass.
I'm Rich. I sing and play guitar.
You all failed.
We didn't mention the band name, Mighty 690.
Right. That's right.
Story of my life.
Well, I want to start the interview because now I didn't realize that everybody didn't know this. But, you know, the Sunday radio show, which this will be hour number one of this interview, starts out the same way. You see, Rich, you probably think that you're the beginning of the show, but actually my six-year-old daughter, Kate, is the beginning of the show.
Okay.
So I want to share, I'm going to turn the mics off, and I want to share with you how the radio show starts every single Sunday.
All right, let's do it.
K-U-S-F-F.
And that's how every show starts out.
Did we record that? Was that us?
Well, that's what's kind of scary. And the story goes like this. You know, when I grew up in the 60s, every DJ had a theme song. And I don't even know why I asked Richie, but one day we were having a chat about something completely different. And I said, you know, I'm starting this new Sunday show, and I've been using, you know, Manic Monday by the Bangles re-lyriced, and I decided, you know, that it's just another Menace Sunday, there was something better needed. And next thing you know, less than a week later, this demo appears on my desktop, and there it was. And ever since then, that's been the way that the radio show has been heard worldwide.
You know, I have to be honest, I haven't heard that in over a year and a half, maybe 2 years.
So are you ready now to do the disco mix?
There's definitely a remix in the works, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's going on our second record, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a B-side, actually. We're releasing that in the UK.
There you go.
On vinyl,
of
vinyl
course.
Only.
On vinyl only, of course. All right, so let's do a little historical perspective, because I know enough about Rich, but we're going to make him tell his deep, dark history, too. But we'll start the other way. So this band has been around for how many years?
The band that's sitting in front of you has been together about a year and a half, going on 2 years.
But the concept of Mighty 690 started.
Concept of Mighty 690 started about 3.5 years ago. I was playing out, just me and a guitar, and met Jeremy Castillo. We started writing together, and then it just kind of, you know, and snowballed from there, I guess you'd
say. And Mighty 690, for those of us who are from other parts of the country and the world, was a famous
radio station in San Diego.
In San Diego, a top 40 radio station?
It was like alternative top 40, and you know, it was before my time.
So when was? Yes, sure. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
But,
thank you, John Cleese.
I couldn't really tell you what the station played. I know it played like some alternative, some indie, some top 40.
Have you not gone on the internet to try to find endless? Because you know, you can find. I mean, I have air checks from when I was a kid of the radio that I listened to. Amazingly enough, and Laura Lee knows my daughter won't need that with me because there's thousands of CDs of me already in our house. Scarily enough. But so you named yourself after the radio station because
I grew up in San Diego. It was the hometown, you know, station.
But how did you learn to play guitar?
You know what? I had a a teacher, and then ended up going to school for jazz, and that lasted about a semester. And I realized, you know, I really wanted to just write, you know, indie pop alternative music. So it was kind of a waste of time studying jazz. But
and did you go to college for something else before that?
No, I ended up graduating in communications.
Right.
Look where I am now.
Two of my 3 degrees are in communications, and look where I am now talking to you. So, such is life in the big city. Where did you go for communications?
I went to Pepperdine. Was there for about a year. I had a scholarship and was kicked out.
Nice.
And then I got accepted to
USC.
That's
good. So you got kicked out of a good university.
Yeah.
A good expensive university.
Yes.
And then went to an even more expensive
university. Actually, three of us went to USC.
So I actually got a degree in jazz studies from USC. I completed the whole thing on drums. Rich found me. I responded to an ad and auditioned and got the gig, and here I am.
There you go.
I'm Camille. I'd been playing keys in a band before, and that was in Philadelphia, and I moved back, and their producer, Tommy Hendrickson, they were working with at the time, knew me and paired me up with them. I took classes as a kid, and then when I was growing up, I played oboe for 5 years, and then after that, I went back to piano.
I have a little formal training. I studied classical guitar at George Mason University in Virginia.
There you go. Yeah. Are you from Virginia?
From Virginia. Yep.
There you go.
I'm still at USC, and I study bass in the jazz program as well. And I kind of did the same thing, or I'm hoping to do the same thing that Reed did. I'm just a couple of years behind him.
Leave This World, which is the track that magically came to me, is already how many years old?
Leave This World was released on a little indie in the UK called City Rockers in 2005, like the middle of 2005.
Right.
And that version is now being released, or was released about 2 weeks ago, on Invisible DJ Records on our full length, Cheers to the Bitter End. So you can find it on vinyl. Actually, it's probably sold out in the UK. If you can still find it, it's on vinyl, on 7-inch, and then now on our album.
So you finally have got this full length out, admittedly still on a small indie label.
Yes, correct.
And so what are the aspirations? Tell me about what the plan has been from day one for the band.
I mean, it was kind of funny. Last night we played Rickshaw Stop, and our label flew out from Los Angeles to come see us play. And I was going up to the bar just getting a water, and I looked around, turned around, looked at the band. It's like, this is Mighty 690. I mean, me and Jeremy have played together for years writing songs, but I feel like this is the band. I mean, the band looks amazing. They're great people. They're great players. So at this point, I guess to answer your question, I mean, at this point, it's really about, I think, just being really grateful to have this album out, and moving forward, anything that happens is, you know, is just extra on top.
Got it.
But that that makes it sound like we don't aspire to be huge stadium rockers, because we do aspire to do that.
Well, but let's be careful. You don't want to be a hair band, I don't believe.
No, but I think, I mean, our record is pretty poppy, you know, and I think the music just sort of lends itself to, like, hopefully, you know, mainstream commercial success. So I think that's sort of, like, our aspiration.
Now, when Leave This World came out and you sent it to me, it did find its way pretty high up on the indie charts, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, and that wasn't even college radio play. That was specialty shows,
it did
right?
Really
there was
well.
People like me who've been at it a while and know we have a huge audience, and it did really well.
Mm. It's always funny when we're approached by a fan that'll come up and say, you know, I love that song. You know, helped me get through a really bad breakup with my boyfriend or girlfriend or significant other.
Or, like, I listen to it in the car and cry
and
late
cry.
At night.
And it's
We've
like, they have no idea before. What the song's about. I mean, they have no clue.
But I think that's a good thing, you know, because it's, I mean, a great pop song is, like, you know, universal, right?
You think that it just kind of finds their way under their skin, and about an hour later they suddenly wake up and say, oh man, I'm really sad now.
I hate to think what it does to.
We subconsciously bum people out.
Yeah. So this is basically a subliminal seduction situation, and that's part of the plan.
We'll make you really depressed. Listen to us.
But rock and roll these days, and Rich, we can either reveal it or not. Let's talk about what everybody does when they don't play rock and roll, just out of curiosity. Because I'm going to lead somewhere here, and I think it's really relevant. And I think it's probably, I'm the only one who can get away with covering this in an interview for many reasons, but go ahead.
I teach guitar lessons.
Do you really?
I do.
Very cool. Where do you teach?
In Sherman Oaks.
In Sherman Oaks?
Sherman Oaks, California.
I do a lot of stuff. I play in a couple other projects, one of which pays me. And then I do some modeling on the side, and I go to school for producing. So.
Producing what?
Music.
I play just sort of freelance gigs, recording sessions and stuff on drums, and I teach drum lessons as well.
And Rich, what do you do for a living when you don't do this?
I'm actually a prostitute. No. Sorry.
So that's why we've been working together all this time. Yeah. And boy, is he... Never mind. The best.
That's
you know, by the way, I had a little complaint. Never mind.
Did you?
Yes.
Well, we can work that out later.
I'm sure we can.
We're editing all this out, right?
Maybe he'll give you a discount next time.
Right there. You sure you don't want to edit stand... I've done stand-up comedy in my lifetime. You don't want to add stand-up to that dossier there? Model / stand-up comic. Thank
like
you.
It could be like a whole comedy team.
Yes. Oh, no, maybe not.
Well.
No, she's the funniest. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's true.
She gets away with it. You know, there's very few good chick comedians, so just let her have her moment. It's okay.
I work in music. I was a writer for years, and kind of segueing out of working in music as it is and focusing more on the band full time. But, I help a lot of other bands at radio, actually. So that's how me and Dennis first met each other. A lot of independent artists, independent labels.
Yeah, and to Rich's credit, and the story has to be told, because it just has to be. Yeah. To Rich's credit, the fact of the matter is that Leave This World showed up from Rich. And I just wrote back and said, this rocks, tell me more about the band. And Rich was very good, and it took you months.
Well, in all fairness, I wanted to hear what you really thought of that.
Well,
of
and everybody else. And the great news is that everybody loved the record and played it. So that's where it got even cooler. But now let's take the trajectory of this record. Tell me about England. Now, you've played over there, right? And have you played in England yet?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, so tell me about the trajectory. Because, again, the reason you are here, aside from the fact that, you know, Rich and I know each other from when he was a prostitute, is that the record's good, and the record deserves to be big. And
Dennis,
the
record's brilliant. And the it's not good. It's brilliant.
And the record, shut up. Well, and the record does deserve to sell a lot of records, but you know and I know what it takes these days. Being released in England was part of the plan, was it not, to get some buzz going here?
It was part of the plan. I mean, City Rockers released a 12-inch called Leave This World, which we just spoke about, which did really well. It sold out.
How many units did it sell?
I don't know. It was like a limited run, maybe 2,000, 3,000.
Right, but that's impressive for that sort of thing for a band they've never heard
of.
Yeah,
and then our second single over there, Believable, which was released on Kids, sold out like instantly in the Rough Trade shops. So it was all in all the little indie, you know, indie record stores, but that sold out as well. So it did well. And then our third single, Keeping You Mind, sold. I think it's probably sold out at this point. And right now, we've been kind of watching, you know, sales on iTunes and the requests we've been getting for albums shipped out through Invisible DJ. And there's been a lot of requests from Japan.
Really?
And there's no promotion over there whatsoever.
And what is now Invisible DJ is a very, very small indie label.
Well, Invisible DJ was started by Jeremy Weinberg and Brett Brooks, who have both been working at Fred Siegel in L.A.
They came from Fred Siegel to form a record company under the premise that what they learned from Fred Siegel about marketing and trends and people who are willing to buy way overpriced clothing that looks like...
People that have money to spend on
People that have money to spend on T-shirts that are distressed by somebody who, you know, spent a lot of money to distress them. Hey, I'm not saying I haven't bought stuff there. Look at me. I'm wearing red pants. Okay, I'm the wrong. You know, I'm wearing the glasses I'm wearing. So, you know, I'm a slave to the trends too. But so that was their premise, I assume, when forming the label.
Yeah, they released a few compilations on the Invisible DJ label, and I believe we're the first full length.
Really, the first full length.
They're also big fans of music in general, and they really wanted to bring some bands over to Fred Siegel and help out some bands that they felt like deserved their help. So.
Yeah, and when they heard us, I think they sort of thought that our sound would sort of mesh with, you know, their idea of, you know, fashion and
so did they come see you at a club? And
yeah.
Jeremy Weinberg, who does A&R for the label, is, you know, at the time, I think he was probably about 20 years old. He was coming to all the shows, and we just thought he was a fan. He was coming up afterwards, you know, requesting, you know, import vinyl and CDs, and we met up, about 6 months ago?
Yeah.
And we had a serious conversation, and the game plan was amazing, so, you know.
Now, will they be your U.S. label, or do they have aspirations of being a worldwide entity?
They have licensed the album, but, you know, right now it's going so well. We love the team that we have that, you know, we'd love to...
They're very dedicated to helping us, which is good for us. Like, it's nice to have someone that's so into doing things for us and not just pushing us off to the side and being like, yeah, we'll get to you when we have time.
So then from your perspective, Richie, as someone who deals with labels on a constant basis, and you chose this label versus all the other options. So tell me the thinking behind that. Was it the trendiness or I might as well, because love us.
Well, partially because they did love us, and I liked the game plan they had moving forward. But I have so many friends and bands that are on major labels, and everyone's just has a horrible story to tell. I mean, 99% of them. I mean, for them, it was more about, you know, being creative, and the music first, and then everything else will follow.
Right.
And that's the way it's been so far. It's just
I'm an A&R guy, and here's the plan. First, we're gonna get P1 play.
Yeah, we're going to radio. We're gonna get
P3 play, and then we're gonna get P4 play. We do a thing called a musical sandwich, and this is an opportunity for the audience to find out what you would like to play, because in general, And it's kind of ironic here because we're all going to, it'll be a couple of weeks hence after we play this interview, we're about to go DJ together at a club after this at 10 o'clock tonight. So that's kind of ironic because when you see what I've pulled out, it'll really scare you. It's two of your songs as the bread and anything you want to play in between that you want to play with Mighty 690 songs. And you can do it for any reason. It can be because you just really have a real opportunity to look at me and say, I don't like this guy and I want to make him play some things on the radio that he'll devastatingly not want to play. Or more importantly, the real goal is that bands make the best DJs. And when I come in here and do it every time, I'm always blown away by how incredibly cool it is.